RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So as you probably know, the World Health Assembly agreement was reached, or they have reached agreement, on wide-ranging decisive package of amendments to improve the international health regulations, setting a date for finalising negotiations on a proposed pandemic agreement. You heard from Meryl Nass earlier. We thought we'd get James Rogowski back. He was with us on Friday in anticipation of all of this and what had happened just before. We're getting James back this morning on the program. James, thanks for coming back on.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, Meryl thought this was a win.
Oh, I completely and totally disagree. And so the understanding of what this was leading up was confused by many people going all the way back to February 6th of 2023.
Yeah.
A lot of people, unfortunately, did not pay attention to the International Health Regulations Review Committee final report. And so what happened a year ago was, actually a year and a half ago, going all the way back to September 2022, the nations proposed hundreds of amendments. And for 4 months, October, November, December, January, into February of 2023, the International Health Regulations Review Committee looked over all of the amendments from the various nations, and they filed a report on February 6th that was made public. And then on February 20th, they had a meeting and they went over all of the details. And essentially at that point, the kibosh was put on a lot of the more egregious aspects of what was proposed by the nations, but it was kicked to the curb. There were many ridiculous things, one of which was Article 3, where India proposed crossing out, you know, that the regulations would be implemented with respect for the dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms of people. Well, India said, oh, that was a misunderstanding. And I can see from the document that they submitted that they wanted to add something to it, but they left out those things and it was taken as being removed. There was a lot of talk over the last year about the change in the definition of a standing recommendation or a temporary recommendation. And what that really got mixed up with was the core of what the nations were asking for. And the African delegation and the Bangladesh delegation, very specifically Bangladesh, wanted to change those definitions. But what they really wanted, they got in these documents that were adopted. They wanted equitable access to pandemic-related products. Now, they changed the name a little bit on that because they don't call it pandemic-related products anymore. It's relevant health products. And those include diagnostics and drugs and jabs, but also cell and gene-based therapies. They added that in at the last moment. And other, you know, technologically advanced medical products. So what actually was adopted by the World Health Assembly was an enormous contract, in a sense. It's a solution to a trade dispute where originally the nations wanted to put Tedros in charge of an allocation mechanism. Article 13 in the amendments originally said that Tedros should have the power, that his recommendations should be orders, not in controlling your doctor or how you're treated, but in the distribution of products. They wanted to give Tedros the power and the authority to say to a nation like the United States, well, you have the capacity to make something that some small island nation or some other relatively poor nation, they need it. So Tedros is going to tell country A to give it to country B. Well, the review committee said, yeah, that's just really not going to work. The nations aren't going to go for that. But more importantly, that would put a lot of liability on the WHO to be in that position. So after quite some, you know, time, the negotiations headed towards putting a lot of that into the treaty in the means of the pathogen access and benefit sharing system, where the wealthier nations said, well, you know, if you give us your pathogen information, like South Africa, gave Omicron to the world and then watched as Pfizer and Moderna basically pirated that genetic information and made billions of dollars by putting it into the booster. South Africa basically said, and the African nations as a group said, well, you took advantage of us, you know, that time. We're not letting that ever happen again. So Article 13 had in it very clearly, we're not giving you any pathogen information unless you share the benefits. Well, over a year ago, that sort of moved over into the discussions with the pandemic treaty as the pathogen access and benefit sharing system. Well, that's still on the table. The treaty was not killed. It was postponed, and they're going to pick up negotiations in July, shooting for a resolution by the end of the year. But here's the piece of the puzzle that absolutely nobody is talking about, and it's on the other side of Geneva, okay? In the WIPO negotiations, the World Intellectual Property Organization, they reached an agreement on a treaty, and they had a signing ceremony on May 24th, Friday before the assembly was to begin. And that, in my view, changed everything. That was the sticking point in these negotiations. They wanted to be able to feel assured that if the nations went looking for pathogens and handed them over, that there was going to be a tracking mechanism to make sure that they were given, recompense, get some kind of benefit for it. So the treaty that was signed by 138 nations said basically that if any patent is submitted, in that patent, if it's utilizing genetic information, the source of that information must be identified. Well, I think what happened, I cannot prove this, but you can see the results of what ultimately happened, is that gave a certain level of assuredness that if pathogens were handed over, there would be a way of, you know, getting a royalty or whatever it might be. And so with a renewed vigor, when the assembly began on Tuesday, when they were supposed to submit their final documents, not with 4 months notice, right? You know, right at the last minute, they decided to continue the negotiations for the amendments. So they met on Wednesday, they met on Thursday, they met on Friday, they worked into the night till like 4 a.m. They kept going on Saturday. And when everyone was celebrating that, oh, they failed to reach their conclusion, they had just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And ultimately, they reached an agreement. Now, I feel that it's completely and totally done in an illegitimate way because they ignored Article 55. They did not give us 4 months' notice. They did not give us 4 weeks' notice. They did not give us 4 days' notice. They did not give 4 hours' notice. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with Nancy Pelosi, but with Obamacare, you know, they dropped a 1,000-page bill the day before they're going to vote, and she very infamously said, you can read it after you pass it. Just go ahead and vote for it. Yeah. Well, you know, the nations knew what was in this document when they voted for it, but when they came into the room, they did not take a roll call to see if there was a quorum, you know, more than 50% of the nations. Well over a dozen nations were behind in their dues, and they were not allowed to vote.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. They did not raise their hands and say yes or no and take account and have an actual vote. They did what the WHO likes to do, is they said, well, we're considering this document. Don't see any objections. Boom, it's adopted.
Wow. Yeah.
And so on one level, this is a horror show, and I feel that is a inglorious defeat. A month ago, when people started claiming, you know, victory already, I actually spent a good portion of a day entertaining myself by looking for videos of sporting events where, you know, imagine somebody playing American football or rugby and they're, you know, running to score, and they're maybe on the 10-yard line and they start celebrating and they fumble or they get tackled. You know, they've got egg all over their face because they're claiming victory before they actually did win. Or, you know, a race of some kind where just before the finish line, somebody slows down, they start celebrating, and somebody comes zipping right past them. Well, that's what happened to us. You know, everyone was confused about what are these negotiations really all about? There was talk of, oh, the WHO is going to try to take away your national sovereignty, or the director general is going to be set up to be your doctor and tell you, you know, tell your nation what to do with their healthcare. But let me read a couple of things, you know, from these documents directly. Now, number one really is the definition of relevant health products. For the longest time, they were calling it pandemic-related products. And the whole purpose of these negotiations was so that nations would be assured that if there was another problem, that they would have access to the products that they feel that they need. So amongst many other things included in relevant health products are medicines, basically drugs, vaccines, diagnostics, and they added right at the last minute, cell and gene-based therapies and other health technologies. Now, this is where the fraud really begins. If your audience has been informed by what I trust you've been telling them through the months and years, you should know that the diagnostic use of a PCR process is fraudulent. Testing someone using that process, or you know, testing a penguin in Antarctica, or testing a cow udder in, you know,
Texas, or a BMW car, as I heard once,
or a peach or a papaya or, you know, whatever it may be, and cranking up the cycles by which they run the test. Kerry Mullis, the inventor of the laboratory process that's very important, said very clearly, if you crank up the cycles high enough, you can find anything anywhere. And so the use of those diagnostics are very profitable. If you find a genetic sequence and they get the equipment put together to craft that into... But the sale of those tests by the billions is enormously profitable. Now, when you go to drugs like midazolam or what I call Run Death Is Near, or any of the antivirals like Paxlovid and Molnupiravir, those products are highly, enormously expensive. A course of remdesivir is thousands of dollars. Well, compare that, you know, to the natural remedies, vitamins, minerals, herbs, and various other treatments. We're talking about high profitability, not benefit to the human being. I don't think I need to talk too much about the fact that Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca's jabs are gone from the market because of the harm they caused. And what's left is the mRNA technology. So the whole foundation of all of these negotiations, with the amendments that were adopted and the treaty that was put sort of into the future, they're going to, they didn't kill the treaty, it didn't die. They're going to start the negotiations back up in July, and they hope to end it by the end of the year. But the foundation of both of these things are products that harm people. I know somebody who had the test, you know, up the nose with the PCR, and it damaged her nasal pharynx. She started leaking brain fluid and ended up paralyzed. These are not inert tests. Now, I just want to read two more paragraphs, and it gives you the picture of what's really going on here. On page 12, Article 13, paragraph 8C, the Director General shall support states' parties, which means nations, in scaling up and geographically diversifying the production of relevant health products. Now, if you go over to Article 44 BIS, which means they wedged it in between 44 and 45 and they didn't want to change all the numbers, they want to create a coordinating financial mechanism. They call it the mechanism. Okay. And it's established to essentially take money from wealthy nations and other donors, funnel it through the WHO to build out the pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex around the world. Now, because so many people have been talking about the information in these documents with old information, which is just as bad as misdis and malinformation, there was talk about, you know, things in these documents from a year and a half ago that led some people to believe that this was an attack on sovereignty, or this was Tedros was going to be in charge of how your government would respond with mandates and lockdowns and all that sort of stuff. They don't care about that. The review committee said, no, that's ridiculous. That's not what we're doing. What they want to do is be the conduit for billions of dollars so that they can build out the industry that enables them when they declare a new term, okay? Most people might be aware of the term public health emergency of international concern. Tedros has had the ability to make that declaration since 2005, or I should say, whomever the director general is. Well, a PHEIC, public health emergency of international concern, or fake, can be upgraded to what I call a super fake, which they call a pandemic emergency. Now, let me just read this to you because it's absurd. A pandemic emergency is a situation that is a fake that has or is at high risk of having wide geographical spread in and within multiple states. Number two, is exceeding or is at high risk of exceeding the capacity of health systems to respond in those states, and is causing or is at high risk of causing substantial social and or economic disruption, including disruption to international traffic and trade. And number four, requires rapid, equitable, and enhanced coordinated international action with whole of government and whole of society approaches. Well, that could be almost anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't say that millions of people have to die. It's just a declaration that we want you to be afraid. We want you to be very afraid. There's a pandemic emergency. Here's your drugs, here's your jabs, here's your tests, here's your masks, and the money flows.
Yeah.
So what they learned from the last 4 years is that people fall for that story. They
and that's
fall
been a
mis-
a misdirection sort of play. So what you're describing really is the whole business model being cemented in. That intellectual property thing that you mentioned May 24th, that got that out of the way, right? So,
it put it in place.
Yeah, well, okay. but eliminated the roadblock or whatever.
Exactly, the speed bump was gotten over.
And then they hit the gas because they know that's happened, right? So one of the biggest fishhooks, really, while we're talking about sovereignty and all of that, is satisfying those countries in that way. So there's a line to accountability or whatever. And then you're saying with the distribution chain of money and resources, a wealth transfer, let's say, from one part of the world to the other, that's how you put in place distribution in the end, right? So the components of the model come together, and we're all snapping and sniping about sovereignty and all of that. But really, like you said, I think early on when we chatted to you, this is a trade agreement more than anything, right?
Well, you know, I hate to say this, but this is a very well-crafted contract.
Right.
You know, everybody got a piece of the pie, and that's what the difficulty was. All of the nations, if you look at how much some of the nations pay in dues, it's astonishingly small. Some of the smaller African nations pay $5,000, $10,000, $20,000. And so I came to the awareness that the WHO fits the description that George Carlin talked about many, many years ago. You know, it's a big club and you ain't in.
Yeah.
And so it literally is a country club. It's a club for countries. Now, why do people join, you know, country clubs? I don't know how much it costs to join Mar-a-Lago, okay, or any other country club in the world. You know, why do people pay hundreds of thousands of dollars or even $1 million to join a country club? Is it the food? Is it the golf? Is it the tennis? No, it's the ability to connect with people who are also members.
Yeah.
And if you're golfing and you get together with somebody and you, you know, become friends and you make a deal, if your nation has to pay $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 to join the WHO Country Club, and all of the rich power brokers want to give you millions of dollars to build manufacturing plants in your nation, that's a pretty good return on investment. So if you vote appropriately and you can see language in the document that seems like it's going to have some money coming in your direction, you'd quite frankly be a fool to pass up on the deal. And that's why all of the nations were, you know, obvious from the very beginning. Oh, we're all dedicated to making these agreements go through because we want this to happen.
Yeah.
Now, some nations want it for other reasons. They want the control, you know, thus the global health security strategy of the United States. They want to have, you know, this work going on all around the world because it fits in with their foreign policy. There was an interview about a year ago with Kathleen Sebelius, who's a former Secretary of Health and Human Services under Obama. And she let one cat out of the bag. She said, well, you know, a lot of nations don't like it when we have military boots on the ground. But, oh, they love it when we show up with doctors in white coats.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do a spoiler. You know, I'll do a spoiler alert for people who haven't seen the movie Sound of Freedom. I don't know if you've seen the movie.
It's about I haven't heard of it, though. Definitely. Yeah.
You know, it's about human trafficking and so forth. I'm going to spoil it for you. OK, when the apparent good guys were trying to infiltrate into the camp in the jungle of the bad guys, the way they got in was they posed as doctors who were bringing vaccinations for the bad guys' camp. And they let them right in because even the bad guys go, oh, I got to have our vaccines. And so what we're dealing with here, and there's one more paragraph that I find to be just really personally very interesting. It's 44 BIS 2E on page 31. And this is a brain bender. And maybe I'm wrong about this, but you tell me. Okay. This is something where the financial mechanism shall leverage voluntary monetary contributions for organizations and other entities that are supporting states' parties. Now, I had wondered why there were so many non-government organizations and civil society organizations, call them what you want, you know, non-state actors, foundations, nonprofits, whatever. They all really wanted this agreement to go through. And that line right there, that it will leverage voluntary monetary contributions for organizations and other entities, makes me think of things like Planned Parenthood or, you know, Doctors Without Borders and so forth and so on. That seems to be the funnel where the money will be able to flow to all of the public-private partnership organizations that can do whatever the heck they want to do, so long as it's in alignment with the people who are directing traffic with the flow of the dollars. And so, you know, what I have seen for, you know, 18 months or so with these documents, I got a very straightforward clue when the Indonesian health minister was talking to the B20 in Bali. He said about the pandemic fund, the United States has set up this fund. They're going to have billions of dollars. Go invest. This is a great business opportunity. Get into the pandemic preparation, you know, market sector, whether it's laboratory equipment or testing facilities or manufacturing or whatever it may be. This is taking money from wealthy nations through taxes or debt and funneling it through the WHO to hand over to oligarchs in poorer nations, not to help the people, but to line their pockets while they're manufacturing products that damage people's health, not make anybody healthier. Now, if they were talking about, well, we got to get everybody, you know, vitamins and minerals and amino acids and essential fatty acids and, you know, fundamental nutrition and herbs and you know, essential basic fundamental health products, that would be one thing. But there's no money in that. You know, the money is in scaring the bejeebers out of people and showing up with very expensive drugs or tests or jabs that put a lot of money into the pockets of big pharma. I'm very concerned about this. I don't believe it's a win at all. I think it's a disastrous defeat, but I'm an optimist. And what I see in here is now we understand very clearly the blueprint of the game that is being played.
They've been exposed, let's say.
Their cards are now on the table. Yeah. We have to evaluate and analyze the game that is being played on us. They want money to be transferred from wealthy nations through the WHO to poorer nations. They're not coming to jab people necessarily in the United States or UK or EU or Australia. They want our money so that they can jab the rest of the world because they missed them the first time around.
And the likes of the United States get a foreign policy instrument that's acceptable.
Yep.
White-coated doctors, let's say.
And of course, manufacturing plants, you know, that put billions of dollars into the local economy.
Yeah. You have to have a pathogen or a pandemic or two once it's all set up to make it all work and keep it all going. So that would be an inevitability, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you got to keep rotating your stock and putting out more contracts and keeping those operations in business. And you know, I've been saying for 18 months, this is a business deal to set up a cartel. People maybe have heard of OPEC, the oil producing and exporting countries. This is the Organization of Pandemic Emergency Corporations. They want your money so that they can make products to harm other people.
Yeah, and then put it with a passport and they can kind of coerce you to take them.
Well, in terms of travel, that is very much the case. Articles 24, 27, 31, and 35, along with annexes 4 and 6, are essentially something that is... Now, this is where it gets really confusing for most people. This is not an attack on sovereignty. This is the use and the implementation of national sovereignty to infringe upon the rights of individual foreign travelers. Now, let me explain if we have a couple of minutes. When you leave your country and you travel to another nation, your Bill of Rights or Constitution or Charter of Rights or whatever you think might protect you, whatever law might have been passed locally, isn't going to apply when you land on another country. And once you're there, you are at their mercy. Now, I know people personally who, when they traveled, they were put into quarantine. They were not ill. The definition of quarantine is not that you are ill, right? That is isolation. And the words have different meanings. I know people who, when they got off the plane and went through customs, they didn't have the paperwork that was apparently required. And they ended up in a small room with the medical personnel with a glove on and a hypodermic and an alcohol swab looking to stick something in their arm. And they had to stand their ground. And, you know, they got through that, but it was frightening. I know people who are in the health freedom, you know, world with organizations dedicated to this. And the reason they are involved is because when they traveled in years past, they voluntarily allowed themselves to be injected with the things that they were told they needed. It destroyed their health. And, you know, that's what woke them up and turned them into, you know, health freedom warriors. And so this is not nothing. This is an absolute, complete, and total violation of fundamental freedoms, human rights, and bodily autonomy. But they did it in a tricky way. And they did this in 2005. They're just making it stronger now. Article 24 says that they can implement this using the conveyance operator, the airline, the cruise line, the, you know, train or bus operating company, to implement the nation's health policies when you're embarking or disembarking. And they can quarantine, in Article 27, the conveyance. And there's a word in the international health regulations definitions that is a suspect. If you're on a conveyance where someone else is ill, you're a suspect. And you can be quarantined. And so while it's not as horrible as many, many people have made it sound, those ideas were gone a year ago when the International Health Regulations Review Committee put the kibosh on most of the crazy stuff that was originally submitted. What we're dealing with now is primarily a transfer of money to build out the pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex. Depending upon where you live, they're either coming for your money or they're coming bringing money to build out the industry that is designed to harm people. And it, you know, if people can't see it, I just don't listen to anything I say. Read the documents as if you could profit from that flow of money.
And see how you feel. Yeah.
And see how you feel.
Yeah. Some might think, how do I get in on this?
Well, many people I'm sure do. And I've heard, you know, some stories from people who are at, like, you know, the various summits and so forth. I can't verify this. This is secondhand information. But, you know, I was told that some of the equipment that runs the PCR process, you know, they can process, you know, a swab for pennies.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can charge pretty much whatever they want. It's, you know, an abundantly profitable business because people are operating under fear. You know, really, this is the core foundation to trigger the ability to terrorize people. Now, the treaty that has, you know, being negotiated, there's more in there really about looking for pathogens, bringing them into a WHO coordinated laboratory network to put into the pathogen access and benefit sharing system so that the products will go into the WHO distribution and logistics network. You tell me that that's about health. That's about transferring wealth and having the products on hand so that the moment you scare somebody,
you can sell it. Boom, yeah.
How many bird flu vaccines are already stockpiled, just waiting to be stuck in somebody's arm? You know, this is not what you do when an individual man, woman, or child is feeling under the weather. Okay? You don't reach for a diagnostic test. You don't reach for a drug or a jab and say, this is the answer to all of these problems. You treat the individual person on an as-needed basis with the wisdom of the practitioner who can observe that patient and make a, you know, reasonable decision. And the doctors who were not allowed to do that but did it anyways saved, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of lives around the world. And the ones who said, oh, you know, there's nothing you can do, you got to wait for the jab, you know, the horror stories that we've all heard are, you know, what is going to be multiplied if we allow people to continue to believe that this business model is even remotely acceptable. This is a business deal that, you know, is building up an industry that is, you know, based more on genocide than it is on trying to, you know, improve people's health.
And I've heard people say the market will always tell you the truth. And the pharma stocks went up on bird flu, didn't they? So that kind of tells you everything you need to know, perhaps.
Well, you know, I wish I had all the information about who invested, you know, just before the announcements were made. You know, the next thing that they've got coming, if we have a minute, I'll tell you about it. If people know about Event 201, that was, you know, the tabletop exercise, yep, you know, that essentially was the same as COVID. In 2022, in October, they did a very similar exercise, same group, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Johns Hopkins. They did a tabletop exercise called Catastrophic Contagion. And it's set in Eastern Venezuela. And Eastern Venezuela is the country of Guyana.
Well, yeah, which is under threat of attack or
annexation. Yeah, annexation. Venezuela claims.
By Venezuela, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the main reason is there have been massive oil and gas reserves found off the coast of Guyana. And so the setting for the SEERS outbreak, it's an enterovirus that has become able to be spread through respiratory ailment, and it infects children. Now, this is their simulation.
Oh, yeah, well, that's always handy, isn't it?
Okay. It's scheduled to happen in 2025. Now, you know, this is just a tabletop exercise simulation. Who knows if that's going to happen? But when I learned about this more than a year ago, I noticed that they did not reserve the domain name catastrophiccontagion.com. So I snagged it and I wrote an article, had a little bit of fun with it. So if you want to entertain yourself, go check out catastrophiccontagion.com. I certainly hope that it doesn't come true. But if you're aware that these are the games that they want to play with your mind, then you're a little bit more, you know, you're a little bit better prepared
ahead of it. Yeah.
To see
yeah.
through the BS. You know, yeah. I still haven't figured out how those penguins got to Texas and infected the udders of those cows. But, you know, it's a really good story and people are falling for it. Now, there may very well be pathogens out in the world that we all have to be careful of. But what they're doing here is building the infrastructure to profit from the fear and the bad decisions that people make when they are afraid. These are terrorist organizations. There's a county in Florida who the Republican Party made a proclamation that's saying the WEF and the UN and the WHO are terrorist organizations. And every time they come out with a new fear-mongering for disease X, ask yourself, are you afraid? Well, if anybody is made to be afraid over something that does not exist, it's just an idea, you're being terrorized.
Yeah.
And that organization is engaging in terrorism. And it needs to stop, and it will only stop when people wise up and realize, you know, number one, follow the money. You know, the simple question that everybody should ask about this particular agreement, how much is this going to cost and where's the money going to go? I didn't see any details about audit trails. Mm. I didn't see any, you know, information about here's where we're going to spend the money. No. Don't look at any of that. This is open-ended. They didn't put any numbers on it. This could be any number, any amount of money that they want. This is a horror show.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think that gives us quite a clear view from you anyway. It really does. I think I'm kind of clicking on it now. You mentioned it before, but you can see the trade, right? It's all about trade and you're trading in human lives ultimately, but who cares about that? Obviously, it's too tempting for many and it's great to have you put it like that. So, James, short notice, and it wasn't long before you were here before, only a few days, but thanks so much for coming on and explaining that again.
Thanks appreciate for having it. Me. I appreciate it.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.